happiness is a skill that you can get better at. It's a skill that you can develop if you know what to work on. Because many of us think that happiness is something that just happens to us. You know, when everything goes well, when our email inbox is clear and there's no traffic on the road and everyone treats us nicely. Yeah, easy to be happy then. But if we're relying on all of those things outside our control to be happy, we're going to really struggle. Society taught me that a better job, a better car, a better hotel would make me happy. And I've had all those things and they don't. There are a few simple things that you can do each day that don't cost any money that will make you happier than you currently are.
Hej, det här är Hälsorevolutionen, podden som vill stötta dig att hitta nya spännande vägar för din hälso- och livsresa. Hur kan vi leva för att finna mer vardagslycka i våra liv? Det verkar vara ett stort tema i höst, åtminstone om man kollar bokfloden. Ja, vi har ju haft flera avsnitt om lycka tidigare och idag så ska vi ta nästa steg. Jag heter Carina Lundstedt och är förläggare och poddproducent. Välkommen hit och hej Maria!
Hej Carina i Stockholm, jag sitter här i Rom. Ja, nu kommer omtyckta hälsoförfattaren och allmänläkaren Rangan Chatterjee ut med sin bok om lycka. Handlade om mera pengar, högre status, att vara en i andras ögon aktad medborgare. Nej, säger Dr. Chatterjee, som gör en stor egen omvärdering i boken kopplat till hur han själv uppfostrades i en indisk läkarfamilj i England. Och i hans barndom var det väldigt viktigt att ha fin titel, tjäna mycket pengar, vinna tävlingar och ha anseende. Men det här, menar Rangan då, inte gav familjen mer lycka utan bidrog till pappans tidiga död. Så vad är istället riktigt viktigt? Och det ska vi undersöka idag.
Mm. Jag sitter i det otroligt vackra Norstedtshuset på Riddarholmen i Stockholm och väntar på att Rangan Chatterjee ska komma in, eller snarare att jag ska släppa in honom efter att vi har gjort vår lilla introduktion. Och det är ju tredje gången som vi träffar Rangan, och det gör vi ju inte med alla. Det är ju för att han är en one of a kind, eller
ja, lika intelligent som trevlig och mänsklig person, verkligen. Så jag ser fram emot det här mötet igen.
Ja, men jag går väl och ser om vår gäst är redo här.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Den här veckan så fortsätter vi vårt roliga sponsrade samarbete med Skinome, färsk hudvård. Produkter helt utan konserveringsmedel och andra onödiga tillsatser. Det här är ett svenskt hudvårdsföretag grundat av hudforskaren Dr. Johanna Gillbro. Och idag ska vi fortsätta prata om Skinomes innovativa solskyddsprodukter, eller hur Maria?
Ja, vi gillar ju båda att njuta av solen, liksom de flesta svenskarna. Solen är ju inte bara en källa till glädje och värme och ljus. Den är ju också vår främsta naturliga källa till D-vitamin, och det mår vi ju bra av.
Och som alla vet kan för mycket solexponering medföra risker på grund av solens ultravioletta strålar, det vi kallar UV-strålning. Vi vet hur viktigt det är att skydda huden på bästa sätt. Och både Carina och jag har börjat använda Skinoms solskydd Sun-Emulsion.
Ja, vår sponsor Skinom erbjuder två solskydd med olika solskyddsfaktor. Dels Sun-Emulsion SPF 50+, och så den senaste nyheten Sun-Emulsion SPF 30. Och båda de här ansiktsprodukterna går att använda som enda dagkräm om man vill, då de också innehåller både vårdande och återfuktande ingredienser samt prebiotika som stärker ditt mikrobiom.
Tänk på att applicera rikligt med solkräm just i ansiktet. Förutom att stärka skyddet mot cancer så kan du också minska risken för UV-inducerade ålderstecken. Och då talar vi om rynkor, pigmentfläckar och brustna blodkärl. Skinoms senaste nyhet, Sun-Emulsion solskyddsfaktor 30, innehåller också en innovativ ingrediens från den svenska västkusten. Vi talar om algika som tillverkas just av alger. Studier visar att algika förstärker den solskyddande effekten av UV-filter och skyddar huden mot miljörelaterade luftföroreningar.
Ja, det här är innovativt. Skinoms solkrämer passar både barn och vuxna, även de med känslig hud. Om du blir osäker på om du ska ha solskyddsfaktor 50 eller 30 så kan du gå in på Skinoms hemsida och göra deras solskyddstest. Just nu så kan du prova Skinoms solskydd och övriga hudvårdsprodukter extra förmånligt. Med koden Hälsorevolutionen 20 så får du 20% rabatt under april månad. Rabatten gäller inte på redan nedsatta varor. Gå in på skinom.com och beställ den nya generationen solskydd.
Rangan Chatterjee, welcome to Hälsorevolutionen again. It's wonderful to have you. It's the third time. Very few guests have been with us for 3 times, and we love having you, so welcome.
Thank you so much. It's always fun to speak to you, and I really appreciate you having me on again. Thank you.
So you have an idea in the book that we could help ourselves to get rid of very tiring masks by opening all meetings by describing how we feel in 3 words. So I was thinking, let's do that today. If you would give this morning 3 words, what would they be for you today?
I think the 3 words that come for me at the moment are calm, grateful, and peaceful.
Wow, you're sounding like a complete guru today.
I don't mean to, but that's honestly how I feel these days. I actually genuinely feel in such a good place. Like, I feel calm a lot of the time, especially if I compare to the younger version of myself. Even when I was coming to Stockholm for my first book, maybe 5 years ago, I feel I'm still the same person in many ways, but I'm also very different. I think externally it might appear the same, but internally I have transformed. I have changed through a lot of the principles I outline in the book. And why am I so grateful? Well, as we have this conversation, I've been in Stockholm for 3 days now, and I'm really taking it in. Like, it's so special to come here and be able to speak on television about concepts that I'm really passionate about. We did an event in the center of Stockholm on Tuesday night, and there was 540 people there in this beautiful old cinema. And I just think, wow, what an incredible life where I get to come to a foreign city in a foreign country and be received by people with smiles on their face, and they want to hear what I have to say. So I feel I can take it in today in a way that maybe I couldn't take it in the past.
Wonderful words. Okay, do you want to hear my words today?
Yes, I would love to.
Hot, I'm in Rome, grateful and curious about our interview, what you're going to say.
I mean, I love those three. They get me thinking straight away. They take me to where you are. You're hot. You're in Rome. It's certainly not hot in Stockholm at the moment, even though I'm wearing a t-shirt. Curious, which is fantastic. And grateful. Why are you grateful?
To be alive.
Yeah.
I think we live in a very difficult world, and so many things are happening right now. And I'm just grateful to have yet another day of life.
Well, I love that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, Carina, do you have 3 words for us?
Yes, I have. The first one is tired, and the second one also grateful. And the third one is happy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tired because I was out touring with another book, my book, and the train was delayed. So I came in quite late, but I'm fine. Slept 5 hours. You shouldn't do that every night, right? No. But that's okay. And very grateful for my beautiful sons. And I met my son this morning and we had coffee and he's amazing. And just happy because everything is like flowing right now. Wow. In my personal life, and it hasn't the last years. So, then as Maria says, there are so many other big things around us, which of course make you not so happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a good, fantastic little practice that we have right there that you have suggested in this beautiful book, which is full of practical ideas, but also I think big frameworks for our thinking. So I'd like to start with, you were trained as a doctor, but here in this book, you start talking about health factors that are upstreams from health, such as thoughts and attitudes. How do you mean?
You know, I've been a doctor now for 22 years, so I've seen tens of thousands of patients. And when a patient comes in to see me, I'm always trying to find the root cause of their problems. I've never been satisfied just to give a pill for a symptom. I've always wanted to know, well, why has the patient got the symptom in the first place? And for many years, I have said that 80 to 90% of what we see as doctors is in some way related to our collective modern lifestyles. Okay, now I use those words very carefully. I'm not putting blame on people. I understand that modern life can be very stressful and very tough and very busy. But nonetheless, we have to be honest and say that the way that we are living our lives, or I should say the way many of us are living our lives, is making many of us sick. And we know that rates of anxiety, depression, autoimmune disease, things like type 2 diabetes, you know, cancer, all these things are growing and going up. And so for many years, I've been trying to help people change their lifestyle by making suggestions and small things that they can do that will make big changes. And we've spoken about some of those things when I've been on your show in the past. But what I would also realize is that some patients would change their lifestyle. They would feel better for a few months, and then they would go back to what they were doing before. I thought, this is really interesting. Why are people doing that? It's not a knowledge problem. They've got the knowledge, they've applied the knowledge, they felt better, yet despite that, they go back. And so I observed which of my patients could transform their lives for good rather than just for 2 or 3 months. And I observed that actually it was the patients who had a really thoughtful approach to life. It's people who didn't allow external events to overly bother them. They very much felt in charge of what was going to happen to their lives, as opposed to being a victim to the world around them. And I figured out that it was to do with their happiness. I thought the people who are happier naturally find it easier to make better lifestyle choices. And then I thought, okay, that's what I've observed. Let me go into the scientific research and see what the research is saying. And the research shows the same thing. It shows us that happier people are healthier, right? Like, for example, you know, we're recording this conversation in October. I'm in Sweden, you're in Rome. Okay, here it's getting colder. People are wearing jackets. A lot of people have got coughs, runny noses, right? It's that time of year. And there was a really nice study done a few years ago where they took people into a lab. They were all injected with rhinovirus up their nostril. Doesn't sound like a great study to be part of, but rhinovirus is the bug that causes the common cold. Now, this is really interesting. Everybody got exposed to the virus, but they could show that the people who were not so happy got sick 3 times more than the people who were happy.
Mm. What is the hen and the egg here? Because if I want to play devil's advocate, you could argue that people who maybe had a bit of a lower immunity, a bit more higher degree of inflammation in the body, would have different cytokine balances, hence different neurochemistry. Do you see what I mean? It might be, so are we exactly sure that it begins with a happiness rather than beginning with something in the body that creates lower happiness, that creates a higher degree of infection from the virus?
Yeah, I think you raise a really, really good point. And what the research shows us is that the relationship actually goes both ways. So yes, being healthier makes it a lot easier to be happier, but also being happier has a positive impact on our health. So in that particular study, I don't know if they looked at those details. Did they didn't measure pre-existing markers of inflammation, but I think it's a very, very good point. But there's other bits of the research that are pointing to the same outcome. So I'll give you another example, which I write about in the book. There was this long study where they observed nuns over the course of their life. And what was really interesting about these nuns is that their lifestyle was the same. They all had the same diet because they all lived together, same diet, same levels of movement, same amount of sleeps, you know, very similar levels of stress. So they could control the lifestyle, and they saw very clearly that the happier nuns lived longer, significantly longer, and were healthier. And another way that I think people should think about this, and this really speaks to your question a little bit as well, I think, which is, a lot of the behaviors that we're trying to change in our life, right? Let's say sugar and alcohol, for example. A lot of people are trying to reduce how much sugar they consume. A lot of people are trying to reduce how much alcohol they consume. But actually what I've realized is that those behaviors are serving a role. Those behaviors are often the way that people manage their stress, for example. So the behaviors are downstream of other factors in their life. And the key message in this book is that happiness is a skill that you can get better at. It's a skill that you can develop if you know what to work on. Because many of us think that happiness is something that just happens to us. You know, when everything goes well, when our email inbox is clear and there's no traffic on the road and everyone treats us nicely. Yeah, easy to be happy then, but if we're relying on all of those things outside our control to be happy, we're going to really struggle.
I would like to first talk about your dad. You write very movingly about your dad, the hardest working immigrant you can ever imagine, an Indian doctor coming to the UK. Tell us about your dad.
Yes, so Dad came to the UK in 1962. At the time, the UK had a shortage of doctors. They were recruiting doctors from countries like India to come over. So my dad comes, you know, in search of a better life for him, his immediate family, and his family back home. But what Dad ended up doing is he worked. Look, a lot of people work hard. I get it. Loads of immigrants who come to different countries to make their way work incredibly hard. And I'm not saying my dad worked harder than anyone else, but it's a pretty extreme example. My dad was a consultant at Manchester Royal Infirmary. So he was a doctor and he would do his day job as a doctor. But he would come home, and I still remember this, he'd come home at 6 p.m., from work in Manchester, come through the door, and he'd go into the kitchen and mum would have made dinner for him. He'd have his dinner, then he'd go upstairs, he would shave at, let's say, 20 past six, and then he'd come downstairs and he'd go out in the car by 7 o'clock, and he'd be out all night doing house calls for people who were sick in the evening. He'd come home at 7 a.m., go into the kitchen again, have breakfast, go upstairs, have a shower and shave, and then drive into Manchester to do his day job. So for 30 years, he only slept 3 nights a week. He was only at home 3 nights a week. He was away all the other time.
Is this possibly? He was a superhuman. I've never heard about anybody working so hard and sleeping so little.
Well, it's possible in the sense that humans are incredibly resilient. We can put ourselves under a lot of stress and still do things, but it always comes at a cost, always. So at the age of 58 or 59, my dad became sick. He got the autoimmune disease lupus, his kidneys failed, and he ended up being chained to a kidney dialysis machine 3 times a week for 15 years until he died about 10 years ago, just over 10 years ago now. So yes, you can do it. I struggle to imagine now how he managed to do that, the impact that would have been on his health, his relationship with my mom, the way she felt, you know, the kids, you know, dad was never around, all that kind of stuff. But he paid for it. Like, he got sick. And I think the point of that story is that my dad, I believe, confused success with happiness. And I believe that's a mistake many of us make, myself included. I have made that mistake in my career. And I feel through writing this book and through applying all the principles, which are very simple to apply, I think that's one of the reasons I can sit in front of you and give you those 3 words at the start of this conversation, because I've trained myself to choose happiness stories in almost every situation where possible. And so the thing about Dad was, is that if Dad was alive now, I would love to ask him, was it worth it? Because the truth is, he may say it was. He may say, it's not fair of me to say that that was a mistake. Now, I perceive it, you know, from my side, you could see he made some choices and there were some consequences. But since I wrote the book, I've been thinking about this and I thought, if my dad was alive and I asked him, was it worth it? He may actually say yes. He may say, I gave you and your brother a fantastic start in life. Look at what you're doing now. Look at all the opportunity. Look at all the people you're helping now, right? He may say that, but I can't answer that for him. But the point I think that's relevant is I have seen so many patients of mine over the years who think they can keep pushing, keep working through every weekend, staying up late working, not taking their annual leave. We know in the UK, there was a statistic recently that 88% of UK adults have experienced some form of burnout in the past 2 years. That's a staggering statistic. Chronic stress, chronic sleep deprivation will increase your risk of Alzheimer's, autoimmune disease, heart attack, stroke, all these things, even cancer. And so how does this relate to a book on happiness? Well, the point is that we think, and we're conditioned, certainly in the UK, and I think it's the same here in Sweden, that more money, a better job, a nicer holiday is going to bring you happiness. So we push beyond what we can do to try and get those things. And then we get those things, some of us, and we realize, oh, like I'm still not happy. That didn't bring the happiness that I thought it would. And I've had this in my own life. You know, I have all the ticks of societal success. I have 5 best-selling books now. I host a huge podcast that's listened to by 2 million people a week. You know, I've had a TV show. I'm a medical doctor for 22 years. You know, these are all things that society would say, oh, you are a success. But until a few years ago, Maria, I wasn't happy. Mm-hmm. Like I felt there was something missing, even though I had all of this success. So I think a very important thing that we can all do is redefine success for us. And that's what the first chapter is about. And can I just share with you my favorite exercise? Because I think all of your listeners would benefit from doing this exercise.
Yes, please.
I said the first part of this exercise is to imagine that you are on your deathbed. Okay, so that's it. You're in the final hours of your life. Look back on your life and ask yourself, what are 3 things you will want to have done?
I want to have looked after my family really well. I want to be a decent human being who has done good for others. And I want to continue spreading the messages of health and popular science that I work with, which is very meaningful for me. And brings a lot of deep joy into my life.
Okay. And then that's lovely, really lovely answers. And then the second part of the exercise is to use your deathbed answers to create 3 happiness habits that you could do each week that will guarantee you to get that deathbed outcome that you want, right? So I just, whilst you think about that, I'll explain from my perspective on my deathbed. I've done this exercise many times. I want to have spent quality time with my family. I want to have had time to pursue my own passions. And 3, I want to have done things that have improved the lives of other people. So that means on a weekly basis, I can create 3 happiness habits. This is personal for all of us. So for me, I have this written down on my fridge in my kitchen. I want to have 5 meals a week with my wife and children where I'm completely undistracted, a really special meal times together. So if I do that every week, it means that on my deathbed, I know I will have spent quality time with my family. If I can go for a run each week or a long walk in nature or play my guitar and write a song or something like that, I know that at the end of my life, I will say, yeah, I found time for my creative pursuits. And if I record an episode of my podcast each week, which helps improve the lives of other people, then I know at the end of my life, I will also tick that box. So it's a deceptively simple exercise. And what it does is it brings clarity to the important things in life. It doesn't mean that some weeks I'm not incredibly busy, but what it does is it gives me a reason to focus on, it's easy to get distracted by work and to miss meal times because you've got too much work to do, or to not have time to play my guitar because I've got more emails to do, or I've got to prepare for this podcast, or you know, whatever it might be. But just having that there written down, it helps me direct attention to what's important. And honestly, if the only thing your listeners take from this conversation is to do that exercise, I can pretty much guarantee it will start to change the way that they view their life. It's going to help them become happier and healthier. I mean, did you want to answer that? You know, you, on your deathbed, what are 3 things you will want to have done?
Yeah, I'm just nodding here. I think it's so beautiful. And I just want to add, and our listeners know that I had the experience of losing my husband in cancer 2 years ago. And I have met so many people that it seems like they wait until they get sick or somebody else in their close family gets sick until they do this kind of exercise. Then they are like having this wake up call. Oh, I should really not be working this much, or we should move to the countryside, or we should spend more time with our parents or whatever. So to answer your question, I would lie on my deathbed and I want to feel calm. I don't want to stress too much, work too much, because it's not worth it. And it comes with a price, as you say. And sometimes you need to do it, but I don't want to feel totally worn out. And I want to feel that I've been spending a lot of time with my kids and hopefully my grandkids and my closest family, my sister and my mother. And I try to prioritize that already, but it's something you need to do over and over again because it's really easy to get distracted by a nice journey somewhere or maybe a nice dress or something you think you maybe need to work for. But at the same time, to be able to have a creative job which could may have some impact for others, that is also something beautiful. So I think to feel that I did my best, and but not at a very high price. So it's to find that balance. Which is the key, I think.
I mean, thank you for sharing that. It's you made such a key point there, which is we often wait until we get sick or someone gets sick before we ask ourselves these questions. And, you know, my dad's a prime example of that. Like, I think he only really reflected on what he was doing towards the end of his life because he was sick. He couldn't move much. He was on a dialysis machine. All his plans for retirement, to travel the world and set up a street clinic in India to help, you know, people without much. He did none of them because it was all planned for retirement later. And we know what people are going to say at the end of their lives. I know, of course, you've had an experience with your husband, but I've spoken to a number of palliative care nurses who say, look, people kind of say the same stuff on their deathbed. I wish I'd worked less. I wish I'd spent more time with my friends and family. I wish I'd allowed myself to live my life and not the life other people expected of me. So these are really powerful questions. And for me, simply asking myself that, doing that exercise regularly and creating weekly happiness habits that will help me. They're very simple happiness habits that I say, I've already shared them, those three things. They don't cost any money for me to do. They're very, very simple. And what they allow me to do is make better decisions. So a few months ago, I won't say who the provider was, but a huge global network offered me the chance to do my own podcast with them. They were going to promote it all around the world, a separate one to my kind of existing podcast. And it was a, you know, very good financial offer. And, you know, it's the sort of thing that would have tempted me a few years ago because of the impact it would have. But honestly, when I looked at it through the lens of these principles that I outline in my new book, I thought, I don't want to do it. I've got enough on my plate. My mum she's been pretty sick this year, and she only lives 5 minutes away from me. And I don't think she'll be around in 2 or 3 years. I don't want to make myself even busier. I want to spend that time that I would have been recording that new podcast, I'm going to spend it with my mom instead. Now, some people may say, yes, maybe you're in a financial position where you can afford to do that. Yes, and it's true. At this stage of my life, I can. But we all can make those kinds of decisions in our own life depending on our individual circumstances if we ask ourselves these big questions. And so this first chapter really is basically trying to say to people, success is not the same thing as happiness. And if you don't take time to ask yourself, what does success mean for you? You may get very, very successful in the wrong things.
It's very, very powerful exercise. So thank you for taking us through that. I know the Buddhists work with similar things. It's mind-boggling. And you have a lot of other interesting happiness habits. We don't have time to go through all of them, but I would like two of them that kind of just caught my attention. And the first one was the social gym, which was a very interesting concept. And I think I looked at it because I'm a people pleaser. So this was a way of looking at conflicts we have with other people and what they can do to us. Can you explain the social gym?
Sure. I'm glad that that chapter resonated with you. That's my favorite chapter in the book because it's the principles in this chapter, I would say, have changed my life more than anything else. And the whole idea is we understand the physical gym, right? We want to get bigger muscles. So we go and work out in the physical gym, which makes us stronger. But a huge part of the stress we feel in the world comes from the world around us. It comes from our social interactions with other people. Maybe people don't say the things that we want them to say, or our boss sends us an email in a tone that we don't like. Or we're driving our car and someone quickly cuts inside of us. And this whole idea is basically you can use the social world as a way to make yourself stronger. So anytime you encounter something in your social world that you don't like, that person looked at me the wrong way, or that person was rude to me, or whatever it might be, you can reframe that situation to empower you rather than make you a victim to the world, right? It's such a powerful concept when you understand it because it basically is that most situations in life are neutral. It's the perspective we put on them that determines whether they have a positive impact on us or a negative impact on us. So let's take an example like, I don't know, many people will know the feeling when their boss or someone at work sends them an email in a tone that they don't like, right? So you could take, and I say this compassionately, you could take a victim mindset, which is one of, I can't believe they sent me that email. I've worked at this company for 5 years. They should respect me more than that. You know, their tone wasn't nice. Sure, that may all be true, but thinking like that doesn't help you. It creates emotional stress and tension in your body. And that emotional stress and tension has to be neutralized in some way. And often you'll neutralize it with another coffee or a chocolate bar or 2 glasses of wine when you finish rather than 1 glass of wine, because you have to dissipate that emotional stress. But we don't realize that we created the stress in the first place by the way we reacted. Now, you could also go, wow, that email, that's not like my boss. I wonder what's going on in their life. Ah, maybe they're having problems in their marriage, so they're not quite paying attention. Maybe their 7-year-old daughter was up last night with earache, so they're really, really tired. Maybe my boss's boss is putting them under pressure and they're taking it out on me. It doesn't actually matter what the truth is for your happiness. What matters is the story you place onto it. Now, people will then say, yeah, but I shouldn't tolerate a rude email from my boss. I'm not saying we should. What I'm saying is if you don't get emotionally triggered by it, not only do you help yourself by not creating stress, you can also better manage that situation, right? You can then have a chat with your boss the next day, calmly say, hey, you know, that email you sent me, it came across as quite direct. Some people may interpret that as being rude. Is everything okay? And rather than, I can't believe you sent me that email, you should treat me, you know, it's the same thing if we're interacting with our partner. If we're getting emotionally triggered by everything, it never leads to good outcomes. And I tell you, when people think they can't do this, right? Arguably the most powerful conversation I've ever had on my podcast was about 2 years ago with a lady called Edith Eger. Now, Edith Eger, when I spoke to her, was 93 years old, right? And she was full of love, compassion, and forgiveness, which is remarkable when you consider her life. At the age of 16, she was in Eastern Europe getting ready for a date with her boyfriend that night. And her family got a knock on their door, and her sister, and her parents were put on a train to Auschwitz concentration camp. Within 2 hours of getting there, both of her parents were murdered, right? She's a 16-year-old girl. Later that day, she got asked, because she's a dancer, she was asked to dance for the senior prison guards. And she said to me, Dr. Chatterjee, I never forgot the last thing my mother said to me, which was, Edith, nobody can ever take from you the contents that you put inside your mind. So she said, when I was dancing in Auschwitz, I was not in Auschwitz. In my mind, I was in Budapest Opera House. I had a beautiful dress on. The orchestra was playing. There was a full crowd. So in her mind, she was in a completely different place. And I thought that's quite powerful. Then she said, while she was in Auschwitz, the prison guards, she started to see them as the prisoners. They were not free. Edith said, in my mind, I was free. They weren't free. I thought, this is truly incredible. And the last thing she said to me was, I have lived in Auschwitz, and I can tell you the greatest prison you will ever live inside is the prison you create inside your own mind. Those words are almost tattooed onto my heart, because this is what we do. We create mental prisons every day by the way we react to situations. And I know you're so passionate about health, right? And how we can live healthier lifestyles, but we don't think about our thoughts and emotions enough when we think about health. We can create stress in our minds by the way we react to things. Every situation has multiple perspectives, and you can train yourself to take a more empowering perspective. And if I'm ever struggling, and I'm human, so sometimes I do struggle, I think, hey, Rongen, listen, Edith Eger could do this in Auschwitz. you can probably do that in your own life. So I use her as inspiration to reframe things. And a few years ago, I couldn't do it in the moment. I would have to reflect in the evening, go, oh, wow, I got really triggered in that situation. Oh, I reacted there. Why did I react? Oh, I've got an insecurity about that. That triggered my own insecurity. And then you are empowering yourself, basically. So you're no longer a victim to the world. You create your own narrative. So I could talk about this for hours, but this is a concept that really has changed my life, basically. And was that clear, the way I explained it?
Oh, very, very clear. And we have talked a lot in the podcast about Viktor Frankl, who not as eloquently or more from a philosopher's point of view, but a beautiful. I need to listen to that podcast. It sounds absolutely...
I was not the same person at the end of that conversation. I went into my studio a certain way. 90 minutes later, I walked out. I thought, I'm not the same person anymore. Like I've just heard the most incredible wisdom that will change the way I view my life.
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Denna vecka har vi ett betalt samarbete med Bosch som precis har kommit ut med sin nya köksmaskin serie 6. Och jag har ju alltid älskat att baka. Och har tänkt att jag vill baka lite oftare eftersom det gör mig så glad. Och nu har jag hittat ett sätt som gör det både enklare och smidigare.
Vad kul! Och vad ska du baka för något?
Ja, men igår så testade jag att baka bananbröd som jag gillar väldigt mycket. Eftersom det även är ganska hälsosamt. Jag hade i valnötter och inte så mycket socker som det står i receptet. Och först tänkte jag att det skulle vara krångligt att baka med en bakmaskin, för det har jag aldrig gjort innan och jag skulle sätta ihop olika delar, trodde jag, men så var det inte, utan jag känner redan att serie 6 är en pålitlig vän i köket, för det var faktiskt väldigt enkelt.
Ja, vi är ju lite lika där, Karina. Tycker ibland att det är jobbigt med för mycket bruksanvisningar av teknisk karaktär, men den här gången var det kul.
Ja, Bosch serie 6 är en väldigt snygg och cool köksmaskin, bara en sån sak. Den levereras ihopsatt och det är inte svårt att förstå hur man ska komma igång. Jag håller fortfarande på att utforska alla funktioner och automatiska program. Bland annat så har den smarta sensorer som gör bakningen enklare genom att den känner av när det du bakar har perfekt konsistens. Och därtill så har den en unik 3D-mixning som efterliknar handknådning och fångar upp alla ingredienser så att inget lämnas kvar i botten av skålen, vilket ju kan vara irriterande annars. Ja, jag får återkomma lite närmare till just den funktionen när jag bakar bröd nästa gång. Eller om jag ska baka kanelbullar, det var ju länge sedan.
Jag vet ju, det gillar ju du, det är ju väldigt gott. Och det här med 3D-mixningen låter ju väldigt spännande. Hur ofta funderar man inte på om degen verkligen blir genomarbetad när det står knåda väl i receptet, eller hur?
Ja, precis. Och för mig är det viktigt att det är enkelt att lyckas med bakningen för att jag ska liksom dra igång ett bakprojekt. Och jag tycker att serie 6 gör bakningen ännu mer lustfylld genom att den är så enkel att hantera. Det gäller bara att välja program och sen kan man luta sig tillbaka medan maskinen gör jobbet. Eller varför inte fixa köket medan degen knådas?
Låter perfekt. Bors nya serie 6 finns att köpa redan nu hos Power. Och där kan man även få mer info om köksmaskinen. Och vi återkommer snart med mer inspiration och berättar hur det går med Karinas vårbakning.
I cannot stop thinking when I hear you, Rangan, that your background with the Indian culture, with you know, the Ayurvedic thinking about the very integrated mind, body, soul kind of percolates in your thinking. Because I've spent a lot of time in India and it's beautiful to hear. I think you have a great mission here also with Western doctors. So how do they react when you start talking about the mind being a potential prison or a potential liberator? Upstreams affecting our health. What do you meet when you talk to fellow doctors?
If I'm completely honest, it's generally positive these days.
Wonderful.
You know, I communicate with large volumes of people each week through my podcast, every year through my books. I also teach doctors regularly, several thousand doctors a year. We run a training course called Prescribing Lifestyle Medicine, which is accredited by the Royal College of GPs, and we train all kinds of healthcare professionals and how you apply the principles of lifestyle, personalizing our lifestyle to help improve health outcomes. And there's such a huge appetite for this because I think people recognize that the way we are approaching patients isn't working very well, right? Don't get me wrong, modern medicine is really good for some things, for sure. I accept that. I think my training is brilliant for acute problems, really. You know, modern medicine is really good for that, but it's not so good for things like anxiety, depression, gut problems, digestive problems, reducing your risk of getting sick, your metabolic health, whatever it might be. It's not so good for that. And a lot of what we need for that is helping people create changes in their lifestyle. And it is hard, because the world around us is acting against us. It's much easier to eat poor quality food that is absolutely delicious and we're tempted with everywhere we go. It's much easier to sit at our desk all day on a screen and come home in the evening and binge watch something on YouTube or Netflix. That's easier for us to do. So it's hard for many of us to make lifestyle change that's going to help us with our health and our happiness. And I think people are recognizing, see, a lot of doctors for many years have said to me, well, it's all fine you talking about this, but patients don't do what we tell them to do. And I disagree with that. I think the way that sentence is phrased is problematic. Patients don't do what we tell them to do. Well, I've never told a patient to do anything because I don't believe I have the right to tell another human being what they should do. What I do is share information with them. I try and connect with my patient and then share some information that I think will be helpful. And because I don't talk down to them and tell them what to do, I think that's why they're interested in engaging. And I generally get good compliance with my patients because of the way I think I interact with them. So when it comes to these emotions, I think doctors really get that actually, oh, wow, it is hard to help our patients make changes to their lifestyle, but maybe it's because it's not just information people need. Maybe there's another upstream factor. And that's what you touched on before. I've got this nice diagram at the start of the book where I say that your lifestyle choices are downstream from your thoughts and the way you approach the world. Take the example of that email from your boss, right? This is the chain of events that happens. If you are someone, and I'm not criticizing, I used to be this person, right? I used to be a victim to the world. So this is why I'm so passionate about this. You think that, oh, that person sent me a bad email, therefore I'm entitled to feel bad because of that email. And therefore I'm going to eat more sugar, drink more coffee, and have an extra beer when I get home from work because I deserve it, right? Now, here's the thing. These are all downstream consequences of the way you interpreted that email. If you train yourself to be calmer and go, wow, you know, I wonder what was going on there. You don't create the stress. You no longer need the extra sugar, caffeine, and alcohol because you didn't fall into the trap of thinking that the way other people are with you is wholly responsible for your feelings. And another phrase in this chapter, which I think is really helpful for people, which helped me, is if I was that other person, I'd be behaving in exactly the same way as they would. And what that really means is if I was that person with their childhoods, with the bullying they had at school, with their parents, with the toxic first boss they had, with the friends they had, I would probably see the world in exactly the same way as them. And that's another phrase that's changed my life. It doesn't mean I have to tolerate bad behavior, right? It just means I can understand it. And by understanding it, I'm better able to change it. So yeah, these are very, very powerful concepts that I don't think people think about enough in relation to their health. But if you get this right, you change a big upstream lever and you will naturally make better choices with your health.
I think your book is full of wonderful tips. We don't have time to go through all of them, but it's about labeling ourselves, simplifying our lives, choice, self-talk, time management, the mobile phone, and stillness. All beautiful tips. What are you hoping this book will bring to your readers?
I think the main thing I hope this book gives to people is this understanding that happiness is not something that just happens to you. Happiness is a skill that you can work on and get better at if you know what to work on. And the problem is that we weren't taught what to work on for happiness. I wasn't taught by my parents. I wasn't taught at school. I wasn't taught by society. In fact, society gave me the wrong idea. Society taught me that a better job, a better car, a better hotel would make me happy. And I've had all those things and they don't, right? And what I've really tried to do in this book is simplify happiness and say, actually, there's actually three ingredients to happiness. Alignment, which is when the person who you are and the person who you're being out there in the world are one and the same. Contentment, which is what are those things that you can do that make you feel content, calm, and at peace. And three, control, which is not about controlling the world. It's about a sense of control. We know from the research that people who have a sense of control over their lives are happier, they're healthier, they live longer, they do better at work, they earn more money. All kinds of things are associated with a sense of control. So all the little tips in the book are working on at least one of those three things. You can work on those three things with small things every day. And the side effect is that you're going to be happier more often. You're not directly working on happiness. You're working on the three legs of the stool, or I believe in Sweden, you call that a pall.
Yes.
You know, the three legs. You're strengthening those three things. And let me just briefly touch on control. You know, we're having this conversation at a time where some pretty horrific stories in the news going on, right? And some people will say, well, with so much heartache in the world, how can we even think about happiness at this moment? And I think we need to think about happiness now more than ever. A lot of people allow external events that they have no control over to negatively affect them. So you have two choices. One choice is you could sit on your sofa, watch the news, feel depressed, think the world is in a terrible state, drink a bit of alcohol to cope, feel reactive with your partner and your children and your work colleagues because you're so unhopeful about the world. Or you can go, well, the way you change the world is by changing yourself. I passionately believe that. And you can go, okay, I can't control that, but what can I do each day that gives me a sense of control? Right, so I have a little morning routine I do each day, which I write about in the book, which doesn't take me long, and it grounds me. It means that even if I have a busy day at work, or even if there are some horrific stories on the news, I've done something small and predictable each day that gives me a sense of control. And that little routine and ritual I have each morning is me working on the control leg of the stool, which over time is making me happier. So it doesn't change the fact that there are bad things happening in the world, right? There are always bad things happening in the world. Sometimes we're made aware of them in the news, sometimes we're not, right? But we have got agency over our lives, and human beings have to believe that we have agency over how our life goes. And so the whole book really is about showing the reader, it doesn't matter what's going on in your life. It doesn't matter how hard things are. It doesn't matter what's going on in the world. There are a few simple things that you can do each day that don't cost any money that will make you happier than you currently are.
And I think you give a lot of fantastic, both sort of general thought framework, but also general ideas on what you can do. And I certainly got a few new ideas that I can use in my everyday life. As usual, it's been an absolute pleasure having you with us. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and humanity knowledge with our listeners. Thank you, Rakan.
Thank you for having me again.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.